You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Ryan, how did you sleep last night?
How did I sleep last night? You know, I think I slept pretty well. I think I did.
You know, the funny thing is that I was so worried about getting here on time, since we are doing this a little bit earlier than normal, that I didn't sleep well.
You did not. You had a little distress.
I did. But, you know, I can't imagine having a cancer diagnosis, going through treatment and all the stress it brings. And then on top of it, not being able to sleep.
Yeah. As you said, you had an early appointment this morning. Think about having that early appointment for treatment, the early appointment for maybe test results. I could imagine how that would cause a lot of problems.
Yes. You know, and sleep is so vital. It's important to the healing process. But, you know, I'm excited that we found someone to talk about sleep and hopefully give us some tips and tricks on to how to sleep better.
That's right. You know, it's interesting, right? We've been doing this podcast now for this is our fourth year. And sleep is one of those things it's a challenging component of our lives. And so we're super excited that we found someone to come on today and visit with us. Dr. Adam Mills is a clinical health psychologist at Nebraska Medicine and specializes in working with oncology patients. In addition to his clinical practice, he is also involved in oncology research, community outreach, and training psychology residents. Dr. Mills, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Ironically, knowing I had my first podcast to contribute to, I don't think I slept very well last night either. So I was fully aware of all the strategies and tips that I'm going to be talking about today last night.
That's so awesome. You
know, it is. And that just goes to show, right? You guys listening, that you are not unique. It is not something that it just affects you because you have cancer or had cancer. Sleep is something that is vital to all of us, and things can affect every one of us with sleep, right, Dr. Mills?
Absolutely. There are so many different factors that can cause sleep problems. The difficult thing is, as much control as we can have over our, you know, environment, over how we're spending our time, over what we're eating or what we're doing during the day, basically trying to set the stage for good sleep, the ultimate outcome, which is falling asleep and staying asleep, is out of our control. That's the one thing we cannot make happen. There's no switch that we can flip to make that happen. And so I have a parallel, almost like baking, where you can, you know, put the ingredients in and follow the directions and you pop it in the oven and you hope it turns out. Now, I don't bake, so I hope that analogy makes sense. But sometimes I feel like I followed the right directions and something didn't turn out the way I expected. And that's how sleep can be for us.
Right. So when we talk about sleep, is there such thing as good sleep and bad sleep? Is there a certain number of hours that makes it a good sleep versus bad sleep?
You know, a lot of that is going to come down. I think you kind of hear this 8 hours a day, but people can do okay with less. Some people might need more. For some people, the pattern of their sleep cycles may differ. And so people might feel like they're getting enough sleep, but it maybe wasn't enough restorative sleep. Some people may sleep or feel like they're sleeping just fine and for a good amount of time, but they might have something like sleep apnea. So they're stopping breathing multiple times per hour. And so they don't feel rested the next day. So it really does depend on the individual. And even within an individual, over their lifespan, the amount of sleep they need might change. It will change. The amount of sleep they need will change. And so it's really hard to pin down an exact recipe that's going to fit everyone who's listening.
You know, I think of little infants, they need a lot of sleep. And then the older we get, we don't need as much sleep. But then when we age, it seems like we need more sleep again. Is that true?
Yeah. And sometimes even in older age, actually, it's very common for folks in older age to not sleep as much and to just have more sleep problems. And that's, I think, sometimes considered developmentally normal, albeit very frustrating.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Mills, let's jump in and let's just talk about, kind of give a definition if you can about like insomnia. That tends to be one of the common themes. Everybody says, "Oh, I have insomnia." What is that?
So insomnia is a difficulty falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, or difficulty getting back to sleep if you were to wake up in the night. Now, to me, when I'm helping my patients, that's enough for me. You tell me that that's going on, we're going to work on it. The diagnostic manual that we use defines insomnia disorder as you need to have these problems, either falling asleep, staying asleep, getting back to sleep, at least 3 times per week for at least 3 months. And to be honest with you, as much as I've been treating people for sleep problems, I couldn't have told you right off the bat what, or I couldn't have told you off the top of my head what that was without looking it up, because again, to me, those numbers don't matter quite as much. If you're having trouble with sleep, I'm not going to say, "Oh gosh, it's only been 2.5 months. Come back in a couple weeks,"
Come
right?
back and see me.
Also, and this complicates things, you know, in terms of a diagnosis of insomnia disorder, technically, the sleep problems cannot be caused by the effects of a substance, a medication, a medical problem. It sort of has to be psychological in order to meet criteria for insomnia disorder. However, again, practically, when working with patients, I'm going to be fairly flexible with that because we might not know exactly what's causing their sleep problem, but we're going to try to help them.
So you talk about sleep problems. How do those start? Like how do we start to become insomniacs and have these sleep problems?
Oh, great. You could print this quote off and put it on the wall. Sometimes something happens to cause sleep problems, and sometimes they start on their own. That's about all we know, right? We can sometimes pin down what may cause a sleep problem. It could be an addition of stress into your life, cancer diagnosis, a family problem, a problem with work, a problem with a friend, something that you just have on your mind maybe during the day, but especially at night. It could be due to kind of a side effect or a directly caused by a medicate by a medical problem, pain, being sick, having restless legs. It could be just the, maybe caused by depression, caused by anxiety, not about any specific situation, but just something that maybe you struggle with normally. And it could be caused by environmental issues like a partner who makes noise or snores or comes in late, kids waking you up, babies waking you up, noise in your environment, outside your house, pets, right? And then also just some people are biologically more likely to have sleep problems. So women are more likely to have sleep problems. Sleep problems can be genetic. So a little bit of it, about a third of all the things that can cause sleep problems, like about a third of it could be caused by family history. So boy, what is that? 10, 12 things I've rattled off. And so for any one person, it's maybe hard to find exactly what's causing their problem, but a lot of things can cause sleep problems to start.
So why do women have more problems with sleep than men?
That is typically related to just hormonal changes. Although I don't know much more about that. It's just one of those factors that we know as we kind of list off biologically what could be different. It's typically more common in women. Women do tend to have higher rates of things like anxiety or depression as well, so that could be contributing too.
Gosh. And our listeners probably thought this was going to be a simple answer. Here's why I have this, and here, Pam,
Right.
there's so many things that can affect your sleep.
Yes.
Absolutely. That will sort of guide our treatment as well. But the good news is we don't have to know exactly what's causing the sleep problem in order to find some help.
So whenever.
So basically, you just know that I got issues. I'm having a hard time sleeping.
Right.
Ultimately, then you try to figure out, the many factors that can cause that.
At what point in time do you recommend patients talking to their physicians about their sleep? I know you said typically
Great.
3 times per week for 3 months, but to me, that's a lot of lost sleep for that many
Long time.
periods of days and months. I'd be in my doctor's office.
For any individual, it just depends on how aggressive or assertive they want to be with getting things figured out versus waiting to see if it resolves on its own or maybe with some of their own attempts to change or help things. If it's something that is to me like if there's an easy explanation to a sleep problem, I think that might allow somebody to go a little bit longer if it's caused by some sort of stressor or a new pain or something that they're or like an exacerbation of their pain and they know why they're having trouble sleeping. I think some people might hesitate to maybe ask their doctor about it. But I would say for anybody, as soon as they want. I mean, there's no time that I, as a provider, would turn somebody away when they're having sleep difficulties, even if it's been a week. However, that might depend. Their own doctors, their primary care physicians, for example, may have different criteria they use before they would want to intervene. But I would say, as long as it's bothering you, and that's another important component of the diagnosis that I forgot, the sleep problems have to cause distress or impairment. So, yeah, if you're missing work because you're not sleeping well, that's an example of impairment, but it doesn't even have to be that bad. If it bothers you that it's happening, then you can get help for it.
So we identify that we have a sleep problem. What do you recommend that we can do at home to help with this?
Absolutely. There's a lot. And so I'll kind of go through each change, each recommendation. There's kind of a fork in a road when a sleep problem starts to happen. That's for the most part unavoidable, right? We call this like acute insomnia. And that's the fork in the road where are the sleep problems going to get better? Or could they get worse or could they continue? And some of the things that could cause them to continue would be if we start making changes because of our sleep problems, if we start getting into some bad habits because of our sleep problems, or if we really start to stress out about our sleep problems. Unfortunately, the more we worry about sleep, the less we sleep or the more problems we have. So when we are looking to help somebody with a sleep problem, I'm going to be checking in with a lot of different things. I'm going to be assessing, are they sort of panicking about their lack of sleep? Is this something that worries them? Are they frustrated about it? I'm going to be asking really kind of hour by hour, what are you doing when you're laying there unable to sleep? Because that's where we can identify if some sort of problem behaviors have popped up. I'm going to be asking, what do you do the next day, right? And really trying to get a sense of routines. And then thoughts about their sleep and then behavioral changes they have made in order to steer them back in the right direction. So at this fork in the road, typically the people that I meet with are people who have been struggling with sleep problems for a while, and then because they started to have these sleep problems, they started thinking about it, right? They're laying there and they're thinking, gosh, this is frustrating. Why can't I sleep? They're thinking, tomorrow is going to be miserable. I have an early appointment. If I fall asleep right now, I could probably get 4 hours of sleep, right? We call that clock watching, where now all of a sudden you're doing mental math at night. You think you're going to fall asleep when you're challenging yourself with math problems.
No.
We our brain, our worries, whether it's related to sleep or not, when we're engaged in things, when we're mentally focused on something, usually the thoughts and the worries remain at bay. And that's why people maybe feel, no, I'm good during the day. I don't worry too much. I'm focused, I'm engaged. As soon as I lay down to sleep, boom, that's when my mind opens up all the to-do lists. That's when my mind goes back to the time I, fell during the school play in sixth grade. It goes back to something that my friend said to me a couple weeks ago that kind of upset me, right? And now I'm thinking also like, I'm terrified about this cancer. And I know the holidays are coming up. How many more holidays do I have left? And boom, some darker thoughts can go on as well. When that's happening, your stress system is being activated. Even if it's pleasant, even if you're thinking about a project you're going to work on, your stress system gets activated because it wants you to get up and do stuff. It wants you to solve the problems. It wants you to worry about things so they don't bother you when they happen. That's not how our brains work. Instead, you're getting little bursts of adrenaline and you're not going to fall asleep when you're worried or stressed because your brain thinks you might be in a little danger. And we don't want you to sleep when you're in danger. That's not evolutionarily sound. So those are all things that can contribute to this becoming more of a long-term problem as well.
So that brings us to how do we start working through some of these issues? I mean, you can't just go, hey, turn off, quit thinking
Right.
about that.
Looking at the
Right.
clock.
What? Yeah, turn the clock away. I mean, like, what in the world, Dr. Mills, are we going to do about this?
Yes. So for sleep-related thoughts and worries, we have to remind ourselves that we will be okay. Sometimes I joke with folks, I make sure to check their occupation before I say this, but hey, you know what? You're not a brain surgeon. You're not an air traffic controller. Tomorrow will be okay if you don't sleep well. Especially for people that have struggled with insomnia for a while, I'll say remind yourself while you're laying there, it's okay that I'll be tired. I will get through tomorrow. I've done this many, many times. So we're trying to neutralize the negative thoughts or almost the catastrophic thoughts about sleep. Like tomorrow is going to be a disaster. Why won't this ever get better? Right? Instead, I encourage people to think tomorrow will be okay. And even if I'm having a bad sleep night tonight, that's important because it helps me learn what's helpful and what isn't. So sometimes when we get some recommendations going, and maybe they have a good night and then they have a bad night, they might be frustrated by that bad night. And I say, you know what? No, that's helpful because that might suggest that this isn't your long-term solution. So bad nights are okay and they can be helpful. What about other worries? The person who maybe is fine with not sleeping as much, but their mind won't shut up, right? You have this delicate balance for our brain. When we're talking about managing worries, I jokingly call it negotiating with a terrorist because our brain can be this anxiety terrorist. And we have to figure out how do we find the balance? Because if you stiff arm that thought away, like you said, Ryan, if you say, no, can't think about that, what that does to your brain is your brain says, well, shoot, that sounds like I got, look at the reaction I got there. We should probably think more about that one. On the other hand, if we go down the rabbit hole with our worries, so, what if my scan isn't good and then I have to restart treatment and then, what impact will that have on my kids? And I don't know what I'm going to have to do with work then. And my boss has already been kind of mad at me and whoa, right? We're now like, we haven't just waited to cross the first bridge. We have crossed like five bridges, right?
Went
And
rabbit
so when
hole.
you go down that rabbit hole, the brain kind of thinks, well, if we worry you enough, you'll come up with a solution. However, we worry about the things we can't control for the most part. So what's a balance there? How are we negotiating? What we're negotiating with is we are taking the worries that we typically have at night and perhaps before bedtime, go through your greatest hits. What are the things you typically worry about? One by one, write it down, bullet point fashion. We don't need dear diary, here's all my thoughts, but bullet point fashion, what are you worried about? Is it controllable? And what can you do about it tonight, right? If you can't do anything about it tonight, congratulations, you're off the hook. So there may be things that you can control. Like, you got a bill from the med center. You didn't think you'd have a bill from the med center. You're going to have to call them. You can't call them at 11 p.m., right? So you're basically, you can end up with a to-do list from your worries, or more likely you're going to end up with a bunch of things you can't control. And you're going to remind yourself, like, this is important to me, but I'm going to cross that bridge when I get to it. That's our negotiation, right? Okay, brain, I hear you, but I can't control that now, so I will control it when I can. So writing down those worries can be helpful. People find that when they write instead of think, it's easier to let some worries go because you're using different parts of your brain. When we're thinking and we're worrying, the fear center of our brain is activated. But when we're writing, it's a little bit more of like the logic side of our brain. So that can help by writing things down. And then now you're laying in bed. What do you do? Because the worries might come back. And they come back and you say, hey, I already solved that a little bit ago. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Sometimes that's enough and sometimes it's not. So another thing I'm going to recommend to people is having something to listen to. And even more specifically, listening to something that has words. Why words? Well, if we're listening to words, it's harder to worry in words. If, for example, you lay down and you put some white noise on, sound of ocean waves, nice and beautiful, you're going to be laying there worrying at the beach, right? You will still be worrying because it's a sound. It's easy to think of words when you're hearing a sound, right? So what could we listen to that has words that will help us fall asleep? Now the criteria are getting very narrow here, right? Some people will put on an audiobook or a podcast, something that they might be interested in, but because they're thinking about that instead of something stressful, they might be able to drift off to sleep by listening to that. This is going to differ for different people. I listen to audiobooks. They're typically, it can be like Stephen King horror thrillers, and I can fall asleep to that. If my wife were to try to listen to something like that, she would have nightmares of me chasing her around with a chainsaw, and that's not going to be good for us. So different people might have different preferences. There are actually many podcasts that are designed to help people get to sleep. I'm going to rattle off a few of them. There's one called Nothing Much Happens. There's one called Get Sleepy. There's an interesting one I came across called Sleep Baseball, which is play-by-play commentary of fake baseball games. So if you're a baseball fan, that might be something to listen to. And the point of these podcasts, there's many, many others as well, is they have long episodes. They have somebody who has kind of a relaxing or soothing voice. They front load all of their ad reads in the beginning so they can just go on and talk for about, 60 to 90 minutes. And they talk about things that are interesting enough to catch your attention and compete with the worries, but not so interesting that it keeps you awake. So it's kind of in the middle there. So it's an interesting world to explore. Different things will fit for different people. So I encourage listeners to try some different podcasts out. There's some that maybe are more focused on relaxation, deep breathing, muscle relaxation. That's directly competing with the physiological arousal that comes with stress and worry. So that can be very helpful as well, including during the day. I'm going to highly recommend that for people.
As you were talking, two thoughts came into my mind. We had a speaker, Ethan, and he was talking about one of the things that he does that helps him is he writes his worries and he files it
Nice.
away. He files it away, and then when that
Yes.
worry comes back up, he gets it out and he files it away. The other thing was, we also hear about sleep hygiene. We shouldn't have technology. How does that work whenever we are
Yes.
listening to podcasts?
Sleep hygiene is this recipe, right? There's some recommendations that are more or less helpful, and that I tell people they are not guarantees. But technically, with sleep hygiene, let me rattle off a few of those, and I'll address the question about the technology because, right, there's don't look at your phone, right? Wind down on screen time. But there are some compromises that I think we can make there. But in terms of sleep hygiene, some important things to consider. Try to keep a 24-hour routine. Try to keep a consistent routine. Go to bed at the same time, get up at the same time. Even One problem, the fork in the road that leads to longer term insomnia, can be when we change our routine to make up for last night. What we're actually doing is causing trouble for us tonight. So if you sleep in later than usual, if you take more naps than usual, if you drink more caffeine than usual because you didn't sleep well last night, it's only going to be harder to get to sleep the next night as well. So trying to maintain a consistent routine, trying to have about 30 to 60 minutes of a wind down before bed where you're decreasing stimulation, lights are dimmer, maybe not as much TV flashing in your face, trying to cut down on things like phone or screen time. Those kinds of things can help cue your brain that it's time to calm down a little bit. Exercise during the day is important for sleep, but exercise right before bed is going to cause you problems. Having a small meal or snack, you know, a little bit before bed is great. Not a big meal right before bed, that's going to cause you problems. Try to avoid caffeine in the afternoon and evenings. These are all things that are sleep hygiene. What about screens? So some phones have built in like a nighttime mode. And what the nighttime mode does is it adds kind of an orange tint to the screen, which theoretically, and I don't think this has been proven scientifically yet, but filtering out the blue light on your device might help reduce eye strain. So it might, and I think the night modes can darken the screen. And so, well, if you're looking at your phone at night to get a podcast going or an audiobook going or something like that, there's going to be less of that, like, boom, airport runway light bright, you know, that wakes you up. Same reason they say don't watch TV. Some people swear by falling asleep to the TV. If you do, bless you, keep at it. Don't change that. But for some people, the visual stimulation is a problem, which is why I recommend just listening to things. So using your phone immediately before bed, but just, you know, hitting the play button on your podcast, and then maybe even putting it on a sleep mode where it'll turn itself off after an hour or something, can help you use the technology without staring at your phone the whole time. Trying one of those blue light filters, night mode kind of things can help as well.
What about alcohol?
Alcohol is a depressant. So people will swear by their nightcaps because technically alcohol does seem to help people fall asleep. However, it leads to much less restorative sleep. It disrupts your sleep cycles because your body is trying to quickly metabolize the alcohol. So it may feel like it helps you fall asleep. However, it causes lighter sleep, more easily disrupted sleep, and more awakenings throughout the night. So, I mean, there's a reason there's a hangover. People have hangovers, right? You don't usually wake up from a hangover feeling particularly restored. So alcohol, although it may seem like it helps people fall asleep, is not recommended to try to sleep well.
You know, I used to be a pharmaceutical rep back in the day. And I remember that was around the time when Ambien came out. And
yeah.
Soma. And all these sleep aids, you know, and I wonder, Dr. Mills, can you address some of that? Because I know some of our folks are saying, but what about taking medicine? Just
the appeal. Yes. Absolutely. So I'm going to start this off by saying I am not a medical provider. I am not trained in medication or prescribing medication. So take this all with a grain of salt, consult your primary care or oncologist providers, and we'll go from there. However, this is sort of controversial for patients themselves, right? Because there are prescription medications, trazodone, Ambien, likely some others that are proven to help people sleep better. However, a lot of folks don't want to add another medication into the mix. So for a lot of patients, we're just weighing the pros and cons. For some people, they want to do everything they can to avoid another medicine. For some people who take the medication, they feel groggy the next day, and maybe it helps them sleep, but it doesn't help them feel rested the next day. So I'm gonna talk with folks about, hey, do we want to consider, for example, you're going through cancer treatment, there's a lot of stress, everything's in chaos. Is this, if there's ever a time to put all hands on deck and try everything, maybe this is the time for that. However, that's a prescription medication. There are options before prescriptions as well. There are a lot of over-the-counter supplements that are suggested to be helpful with sleep. Melatonin, very common. It's exploding these days. Everything's got melatonin in it. There's gummies and chewables and dissolvables and nasal sprays and patches. I'm just, who knows, right? Melatonin, is a natural hormone that promotes sleep. People have kind of a mixed bag with it. But that is one that people can try. There's valerian root, there is ashwagandha. There's a lot of different supplements that people can try. Follow the directions, tinker with them. The first time I ever tried melatonin, I took some melatonin and laid down and thought, well, what's the big deal? I'm not falling asleep. I learned later you have to maybe take it 30 to 60 minutes before you're ready for bed. So sometimes the timing is important. There's also a lot of over-the-counter, sort of off-label, Tylenol PM, NyQuil, known for putting people to sleep, launched ZzzQuil, which is just for sleep. Look at your ingredients with these. Most of them use the active ingredient of Benadryl. So it's all Benadryl. And if it's not Benadryl, it's the active ingredient of Unisom. And so if you've been thinking, okay, my doctor told me to try Benadryl and it didn't work. Then I tried ZzzQuil and it didn't work. And I tried Tylenol PM and it didn't work. And I tried Walmart Sleep Aid and it didn't work. Well, you just had 4 doses of Benadryl. So check your ingredients to see. Maybe they're all antihistamines for the most part that are these kind of off-label. Talk to your doctor because if you're on allergy medication and now you're experimenting with over-the-counter antihistamines, you don't want to be overdosing on those either.
What
So.
about, oftentimes I meet with patients and they say, man, I just fall asleep so easy. When does that become a concern?
Almost too easily.
Yeah, like you sit down in the chair and you fall asleep.
That, so I would be here. Here's the thing about like naps too, intentional or unintentional. For people who are going through some sort of cancer treatment or who have recently had a cancer treatment, the sleep hygiene tips that you see are not exactly meant for you. If you need a nap, if you fall asleep during the day and it's not, you're not even trying to, or you're intentionally taking naps, that could theoretically make it harder to get back or to get to sleep at night. So if you're accidentally falling asleep, but you still fall asleep okay at night, maybe we're not as worried about that. And maybe we kind of think of that as like, I guess maybe your body needed it. However, if you are taking naps during the day and then having difficulty sleeping at night, then we got another decision to make. Like I said, with the prescription medication, I'm letting the patient make a decision based on their values and what's best for them. When it comes to naps, if taking a nap means it's going to be harder for you to get to sleep at night, but the whole rest of your day is good because you're refreshed and you're alert and you can engage with your family and go run errands, maybe it's worth getting to bed a little later. What we would say from a strict sleep hygiene standpoint is don't take naps, right? But then the whole rest of the day, you're miserable and you're exhausted. And you don't have the energy to go do things, but hey, you can fall asleep at 9. I don't know if that's the quality of life that everyone's looking for. So for each individual, I'm going to work with them to find what they want. Naps may make it harder to get to sleep, but it may allow you to have a better rest of your day if you need it. And so that might be okay.
Lots and lots to digest here. What I'm taking away from this, and I hope our listeners are as well, is there is not a cookie cutter treatment or cookie cutter diagnosis program that you can be on. It is so individual. So again, I think Pam, this brings us back to communicating with your physician and being open and honest and discussing with them what's going on. And maybe, taking to heart what they suggest.
Absolutely.
Is there anything
One
that
other.
we missed about sleep that you wanted to discuss before we get to our last segment?
Well, I would say it may reach a point where you think you've tried some things or you can't keep all of this straight or you're just not sure what might be causing or maintaining your sleep problem, and that might be a time that getting help from a mental health professional, especially somebody who's trained in sleep, what we would call that is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, CBTI. That might be the time to reach out and have somebody really go over your sleep patterns, go over what could be causing or contributing to the sleep problems, and then check in with you regularly about this, especially if folks feel that maybe their primary care, who's excellent and responsive, but their recommendation is let's put you on a medication and that might not be the fit for you. I would recommend looking into CBTI. This can be taught in a group format. Our department at Nebraska Medicine, we had so many requests for therapy to help with sleep that we started a group that we have ongoing at any given time, multiple people in the group. So check with your local providers, your local cancer centers, your local medical centers. Many primary care clinics are starting to integrate their own psychology or behavioral health providers. They might be somebody who could meet with you a few times as well, but don't be afraid to ask for help. It's extremely common, and there's a lot of different approaches that we can take to help.
You know, I love that we don't have to suffer alone. There is help, and you know, it's just communicating with your healthcare providers. Dr. Mills, thank you so much for bringing your knowledge to our podcast. This brings us to our
Absolutely.
last segment. We are sponsored by the Auto Inc. family. Do you have an Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you would like to share with our listeners?
Absolutely. So we know that if you're not sleeping well, it can be really overwhelming. We know that stress can make sleep worse, and then when you're not sleeping, that can make your stress worse. However, you don't need to fix everything. If you see improvement in just one area, that can lead to improvements in other areas. So I would recommend to listeners, you will be okay. If we can get the stress under control, your sleep will improve. If your sleep can get better, your stress can improve. So again, don't think that you need to fix it all. Just shoot for one to two things for some improvement, and you're going to see a pretty big change in your life.
Yeah. You know, it's that domino effect, right? It's the you
Exactly.
fix this piece, the next piece falls, the next piece goes away. And gosh, there are so many opportunities out there for you guys to be a part of things to help you in this area. I love the podcast. Now listen, our podcast is not designed to help you sleep.
Too much important information. Yeah, I would not recommend that one.
Too much important information. That's so interesting to me to think about that with the various podcasts that are, like you said, 60 to 90 minutes of people just droning on and talking. Pam, I feel like maybe I could be on one of those podcasts someday.
You probably could, and you'd probably go over that 60 to 90 minutes.
Oh, goodness. You know, you guys, listen, this is not something that is unique just to cancer survivors. So I think this is an important podcast, maybe that you share with your loved one. Maybe it, you know, hey, this is something we can work on together. And you know, because obviously setting the stage in your bedroom and getting the dark shades and getting it into the hygiene mode, that may take both of you. And I think it's important to engage that with your loved one that you have.
And remember, it's okay if you don't get a good night's sleep, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. You will be okay. We will all be okay, even though we're all up a little earlier than usual today, right?
Right. We'll make it through the
That's
day.
right. Well, Dr. Mills, thank you again for joining us. Thank you for sharing with us. There's so many pieces and parts here to digest and take to heart. We hope you guys got some benefit from this. And I think maybe, hopefully, you'll begin to sleep better. And then make sure you join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships as they have supported the 24 Hours in the Canyon Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website at 24survivorship.org.